I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Smashing the Plateau is part of the Best Network, dedicated to supporting individual entrepreneurs who are experts in their field, but may not be an expert at running a business. Best Network is ideal if you are an expertise-driven solopreneur business owner with many years of experience in your field. If you are a consultant, coach, or professional selling your knowledge and creativity, we're here for you. If you join the Best Network, you'll receive access to the full Smashing the Plateau archive of over 350 episodes, and you'll receive expert, individual, and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands our goal of the show, helping you get your business the recurring revenue it deserves. With teams of like-minded and supportive professionals surrounding you, you'll be perfectly poised to smash the plateau in your business with our membership programs. To learn more about joining the Best Network and how to smash your plateau, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. That's smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Spencer Deering. Spencer believes everyone has the right to do their best work. Frontliners, charity workers, entrepreneurs, next-gen leaders, educators, C-suite execs. Everyone deserves meaningful work that drives maximum value. Revolutionizing leadership development is the only way to get there. As president of Best Work, Inc., Spencer helps organizations prepare next-generation leaders for high performance in the knowledge economy. Starting his career as a high school teacher, Spencer has been a five-star coach, basketball, lacrosse, soccer, and baseball. The specific class or sport at hand was secondary. He focused on leading people to their strengths and encouraging them to double down on them. Spencer, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Spencer, why are you so interested in seeing others succeed?
Well, in fact, as you heard from that bio you read, I kind of always have been. And even when I was a younger person, whether I was in middle school and coaching lower schoolers or in high school coaching middle schoolers, I was always focused on helping particularly the high potential athlete figure out how to double down on their skill set so that they can self-actualize. And I know you have a lot of listeners out there that are focused on how to kind of take their business to the next level. And one thing I highlight to a lot of folks is very often what makes you so unique and valuable was actually readily apparent when you were younger. And so unearthing that was really helpful for me in a much more fundamental way than I ever would have imagined. And I kind of fell into teaching and coaching thoughtlessly because I thought that's where my future was going to lie after I got out of college. And I wasn't specific enough about what exactly about teaching and coaching was kind of my unique attribute and what I could bring to the table. And once I started to really dig into that a little bit more, I could actually figure out how I could create more value and therefore be much more desirable for people who are hiring.
Right. So what did you learn? How do you create more value?
Well, one of the things I had to figure out, because I am very kind of high energy and want to help people, blah, blah, blah. And I have my own kind of ideas, right? And it kind of goes into sales. Like if I come to you and start selling you what I want to sell, is that going to work? No, because who knows if that's really what you need, right?
Or what I want.
Exactly. So what you need to do is figure out not what you want to sell, which is much more of the artist mentality, right? Like if you want to go paint beautiful paintings that are a revelation of what's inside you and hope somebody buys them, that's great. But if you're trying to build a business, you need to figure out what the market is demanding and what you are so special and why you are so special to deliver that specific set of attributes in a way that maximizes value. And I think a lot of people, whether they're working in companies, whether they're entrepreneurial or whether they're solopreneurial, they get stuck on what they want to sell rather than what people want to buy.
And how did you learn that?
I learned it the hard way, because actually there's a couple things that happened to me. Once I got out of college, I, as I said, my first job was as a teacher and coach, and that was really helpful in some ways. Personally, I was okay at it, but it wasn't really my right spot. It took me a while to figure that out, a few years, but I had some amazing experiences there. But then I cycled into the private sector, did a couple of things, ended up as a salesman, which I'm a horrible salesman, because, you know, salesmen are driven by ROI, right? If I spend time or money with you, I want to make sure I'm getting time or money back out of it, which is great. There's no problem with that. That's what great salespeople are. I'm horrible at it because I'm more motivated by learning new things and helping people, which makes me like the worst possible salesman, right? You know, I'll sit there with you for an hour, figure out what's going on and try and help you. And it has nothing to do with what I'm selling. And nonetheless, I was also given a task of a very specific, it was in finance, a very specific strategy to go out and sell. And it was damn near impossible to do it because it didn't reflect the needs of investors. Whereas if I could go out to investors and say, hey, what do you need? And then we can go back and craft it. That would have been a much more effective way of scaling that business. But in fact, I was just out there trying to jam square pegs in circular holes over and over again. And it was mind numbing. And it was a real wake up call.
Now, was that your business or was that you in a sales position for somebody else's business?
No, yeah, that was me in a sales position. I did the classic thing, which, you know, relatively talented young people can do, which is, it's very easy when you have some attributes and some skills that you feel like you can bring to the world, right? And it's very easy to figure out what you don't want to do. It's like looking at a menu. You go to a restaurant, you're like, okay, I don't want these 17 things. It's a lot harder to pick from the five things you do like. And when you're pretty talented, there's a lot of things you could do. And so I was kind of swimming around trying to figure out, okay, I'm leaving teaching. What should I do? And everybody's like, well, you'd be a great sales guy, right? And so I just kind of fell into other people's vague suggestions, which was not the right way to approach it, because I wasn't taking active command in my own life. I was just looking for somebody else to tell me what to do. So that's where I ended up going into finance for a few years before I ended up transferring out and got on a more entrepreneurial route that, like most entrepreneurial routes, had a lot of pitfalls and failures in there, but ended up where we are today.
So what would you say was the biggest challenge you were facing when you decided you wanted to leave that sales position and become entrepreneurial?
Well, I think when you don't know yourself really, really well, you're going to make decisions based on others' attitudes and acceptance. And that's a disaster. And I fell into that camp. So I had kind of a decorated lacrosse career in college, and I kind of looked the part of somebody who seemed to know what they were doing. And then I was a pretty good teacher at a good school, et cetera. But I actually couldn't articulate very clearly what I was really great at and what was really driving me. And so that was a big challenge. It kind of dumped me into the wrong path, right? And like I said, I could kind of muscle through it because I was okay, and I could kind of make it up as I went along and be an okay salesperson. But It's like a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, are feeling that way, especially ones who are maybe thinking about, wow, I want to get out of corporate life and really start something on my own. Probably feel like, hey, I'm wasting my life. Not like a heroin addict robbing convenience store, wasting your life, but kind of just poking along and frankly not making the most of it. The other challenge was I chased cash, which was a bad move. Not for like the typical reasons, oh, you know, I missed all this time with my family or whatever, but I at least have a nice house on the hill. I didn't even make that much money chasing cash. What I didn't realize was what you should do is chase excellence, and then the cash will happen. And that was a big challenge that I had to learn early on.
Right. So how did you feel realizing that you were probably not the best fit in that sales role, and you were trying to take steps that were not really solving the problem? How did you feel at that point?
Well, like I said, I felt like I just wasn't making the most of life. You know, it's like, okay, I could see that it very similar to why I left teaching. So I kind of was living off the chain as a young person and living too wild and too crazy for a long time. Anyway, got it together in college, married an amazing woman. And my first job as a teacher, I thought, okay, I'll just do this for 30 years and kind of calm everything down for a long time. Well, that didn't last, because after a while I got antsy because I wasn't using those parts of me that are really the best parts of me. And that's what I also found when I was a salesperson. And when you feel that way, when you feel like, man, I know I've got so much more to offer, but I don't know exactly what it is, that's a really lame feeling to have. And that's where I was stuck with that feeling, did not feel good. But what I did learn when I was a teacher, because I taught at this wonderful place called New Trier High School, which is on the North Shore of Chicago. And I taught at a tough school, and then I taught at this fancy school, New Trier. And it was great because they actually had budgets for what very few schools have budgets for, which is real legit and robust teacher training. And one of the things they taught us was that attributes that most people think are inborn, like toughness and empathy and the ability to self-reflect, can actually be taught. And that was very powerful for me. And as I was transitioning out of the kind of machine of corporations and into a more self-directed entrepreneurial route, I reflected back on that power of self-reflection. And that was really the first steps to allow me to have a better sense of myself and then be able to articulate it much more clearly and have confidence that I actually could get on the right path and could create real value there and really make a living doing it.
Did your first foray into entrepreneurship, Spencer, feel a little daunting or risky?
Somewhat, but what I tried to do was, because I knew I was going to fail. That was another good thing about being an athlete. I think the athletic mindset is also something I've leaned on, and I would encourage your listeners to think about. Because a lot of times when you are a great expert in your field, it feels very academic. You know, you studied a lot, you gleaned a lot of knowledge, you can be articulate about it, etc. But being an expert is not the same thing as building a business, right?
Oh, it's very different.
It's very different. And so just having the knowledge is like step one. And I think I was lucky enough by competing at a pretty high level. I mean, look, playing lacrosse at UNC is not like playing football at Oklahoma, but it's also not like playing baseball at Bowdoin, right? I mean, there was a level of intensity there that was meaningful to me as I was doing it. And we've been studying a lot of the athletic mindset lately, actually. And even more interesting to me than my athletic mindset is the elite female athletic mindset. Because I think if you can capture three elements of how to be, you could potentially leverage and scale your expertise into a real business that you could build, even as a solopreneur. And those three attributes are, you have to be focused.
Focused.
You have to be focused. Again, talented people can do all kinds of different things. But unless you live a life of focus, you're not going to be a star. The second thing is, and this is what differentiates, I believe, the female athletic mindset from the male, is that you have to be free-hearted. You have to act free-hearted. Be empathetic, be thoughtful, be thinking we, not me. And the last thing is to stay fearless. That was a huge lesson that I was afforded as an athlete, which is you're failing all the time. Basically, all you do is fail. Every once in a while, you succeed, right? Whether it's making a play, during a game, in practice, et cetera. And so to be able to fail well and also struggle well, because it's a struggle when you're working out all the time and everybody else is doing a little bit of class and a lot of partying and you're like, man, I got to go back to the weight room again. And my season doesn't even start for 8 months and I got to grind. So to learn how to struggle and fail well was a huge value add for me as an athlete. And I was able to lean back into that as I was transitioning into entrepreneurship and really seek out opportunities to fail that didn't blow me up. So to take littler bets as I kind of transition into entrepreneurship, take little bets, learn, iterate, and grow. That was a much more important lesson for me and one that I could really activate as I was transitioning rather than, I'm not making enough money. I should go get a bunch of investors and make this ginormous bet. And then when it blows up, everybody loses.
Spencer, were you really clear with yourself right at the outset of being an entrepreneur that it was important to be focused, free-hearted, and fearless?
No, not at all. And I wasn't, because I was still chasing cash a little bit. And so I was still trying to figure out, these entrepreneurs, it's so cool to make a lot of dough. Let's do that. Right. And I wasn't nearly free hearted enough to recognize that what's most important is actually not what we're doing, but who we're doing it with. And I was not focused because even then, even as I transitioned, I hadn't done the really deep digging and the real necessary self-reflection to be able to articulate and understand myself. Really what I was bringing to the table that was different from everybody else. So that is some real, I would say, mindset shifts that have occurred even over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go in with a real big plan, but I knew not having a plan was okay. You know, it's okay, you can figure it out. And actually, you know, somewhere I read one time, 30-year plans change. You know, like exactly. And I think now even 12-month plans change. I don't plan more than probably a quarter out and just try and figure out how to continue to grow and iterate.
Listen, I'd be happy if the plan I had each day stayed the same from the beginning of the day till the end. Forget about 30 years.
Exactly. I think you're exactly right. And it's hard that things pop up. And I think It is just a very complicated world we live in. And that's why that focus is so key. Because if you, as I don't care if you're working and you basically have a customer base of one who is your boss, right? Or if you're a solopreneur, you got to be laser focused on who's important to you, for you in terms of being a customer. And then you have to be laser focused on that spot, that industry, that niche, and just try and be the best you can be there.
Yeah. And once you applied these three principles of being focused, free-hearted, and fearless, what kind of results did you achieve?
Well, luckily, the fearless I had. I was kind of just, and I think that allowed me to be a good athlete early on and continue to be and continue to do a lot of stuff. You know, it's hard, right? You know how it is to be an entrepreneur. I mean, for a long time, my wife was looking at me like, why don't you just go work for an insurance company? Like, what are you doing? This is crazy. This doesn't feel great. You know, like it would be a lot easier to just do it that way. And I think I had a certain fearlessness where I wasn't worried about regret. I wasn't worried about trying things, failing them, and regretting them, right? So fearlessness I had. I think the biggest one for me, and I was kind of empathetic. I don't think I was free-hearted enough, but I basically had a pretty good handle on EQ, which is an important component of what we're up to. But the focus for me was the game changer. Because once you figure out what you're kind of on the earth to do, then you can start saying no. It's like, okay, is this going to help me actually spread meaningful work that maximizes value? If so, then let's do it. If not, it's for somebody else. And that makes things much more efficient.
Right. So what kinds of results did you start seeing?
Well, right away, I started seeing results because I was able to be much clearer in my value proposition. And I think when you're really clear and you're really confident in yourself and what you're bringing to the table, others have confidence in you. And you got to have the courage to go do the digging so that you'll end up yielding that confidence. So as soon as we did that, we began to make, you know, little grinding steps with our former company and really iterated into leadership development because we wanted to help millennials who were struggling with work and how to create value. Figuring out where their right spot is professionally. And then we merged with another firm, Nella Barkley, who's a good pal of yours. And we came together and we created Best Work Inc., which again has a very clear focus. And we're continuing to roll out different platforms out of Best Work Inc. that I'm really excited about. And I think we're going to make real headway. But it all comes from that very specific focus on doing what we do well. And don't do anything else. My dad had a great expression where he told, again, he was telling some talented folks this. He said, do only what only you can do. And that's good advice.
Do you think it seems somewhat counterintuitive for an entrepreneur who perhaps doesn't like structure, doesn't like somebody else controlling him or her?
Do I think that it's counterintuitive to do what? To be focused for somebody who doesn't like control?
Right, to be really narrow and focused.
Yeah, well, I think the adjective you use just right there remind me more of an artist, right? I mean, if you want to be an artist and you want to go create what you want to go create in an unstructured way, in a way that just it suits you, well, then maybe you should be an artist. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, you have to be market first. And I think in order to be effectively market first, you have got to be focused because there are way too many talented people doing way too many things that if you try and be kind of a generalist, you're going to get crushed. And by the way, that's what we were raised to be, right? I mean, that's what school is all about. Hey, be a risk-averse generalist. Get into the best college you can get and then try and get good grades. So all these people that are getting pumped out of college are wholly unprepared for actually what they're going to need to do to be successful in the real world. And I think a lot of our wonderful expert solopreneurs come with that kind of academic mindset and it's hindering them. And so they should really embrace an athletic mindset so that they can take their expertise and leverage it into a business.
So Spencer, if we look at somebody who is a solopreneur, particularly somebody who has deep expertise in a particular subject, mm-hmm. that has gone through the process you just described in college and perhaps professional school or higher level training beyond college as well, where they've been trained as both a generalist doing really well as a generalist and having deep subject matter expertise in a particular area, but they haven't figured out how to get those experiences and get that knowledge to dovetail really well with the marketplace. What advice would you offer for them, particularly as they may be feeling frustrated by the lack of consistent revenue or the ability to be able to scale small successes.
Yeah, and scaling small successes is one thing. I mean, you do want to try and emulate bright spots, right? But I think diagnosing what exactly is driving those bright spots is important. I would also say that those folks who, you know, again, they're doing what everybody's told them to do forever. Hey, just keep your head down, do your work, help out the organization, kind of begin to build a knowledge base in this realm, and you'll be fine. Well, you probably won't be, because you're really going to have to figure out a way to hustle and create value, regardless of whether you stay where you are and you want to be entrepreneurial in your corporation and be kind of a solopreneur there, which is not a bad idea because there are some benefits of doing that. Or if you really want to step out on your own, or if frankly, you've been forced to step out on your own, you think, oh my God, how am I going to make it? I would take like 2 or 3 weeks and try and not succeed and try and fail. And I would, you know, as we've learned as athletes, right? Practice doesn't matter. Like the 10,000 hour thing is a hoax. If you can go practice something 10,000 hours, great. You're not going to get any better unless it's deliberate, unless you are deliberate about what you're doing and very intentional about what you're doing. And I would say if you took 2 or 3 weeks of deliberately and intentionally trying to go out and fail with conversations, you know, you're pitching things that you know have a 95% chance of failure. You know, you go out there and you continue to kind of develop the calluses against failure and you realize it's not that bad. Then when you recalibrate after a few weeks and you start seeking out where the success can be, you're going to know 100% where it won't be because you've been failing, obviously. But then you're also going to have much more deeper and more informative conversations with the market, because a little bit of failure is not going to affect you anymore and you're going to keep driving forward. Where I think a lot of folks with the academic mindset, as soon as they get the C+, they shut down, right?
Right.
As opposed to the athlete is like, you just got your butt knocked out of bounds 5 yards into the stands and the play's going to continue. You better get back in here and get back after it, right? And so I think the only way to cultivate that is to actually do it. And if you haven't really spent a lot of time taking risk and failing, you just got to, it's like a muscle. It's almost like gratitude, right? You just got to practice it and work at it. So that's what I would recommend. I know that sounds like cockamamie advice, but I don't think you're ever going to get comfortable with it unless you do a ton of it in a short period of time. And you got to get comfortable with it. You know it, right? I mean, how many times do you feel like you have had little failures every day?
I don't want to count. I don't want to count anymore.
Right? I mean, every day. So if you are afraid of that, you're going to sit in your house and complain that no one's buying your stuff. And you can't be afraid of it. You got to be able to just go out there and say, yeah, like, you know, 80% of stuff doesn't work. And that's just the way life is.
So, Spencer, whom do you know personally who's done a really remarkable job at smashing plateaus? Where do you see this working really well?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, actually, you know what? Our pal we just talked about, Nella Barkley, is somebody I would say smashed plateaus, glass ceilings, cavernous rock. Right. I mean, she smashed a lot. And I think she was just so far ahead of her time in the 70s and 80s when she partnered with John Crystal to create a process by which you can identify the transferable skills you've developed in one arena of your life and how you can monetize those skills in a vastly different arena. Like no one was really thinking about that back then. And everybody was more kind of focused on the corporate escalator, right? Like graduate from college, go become an analyst, get the VP level, stay there for 30 years, retire and get a pension. That was kind of the model back then. And they were so far ahead of the field understanding what the future of work and what really accomplished people need to be thinking about that they created Life Work Design, which you know you're very familiar with, is just a phenomenal process. And I think personally, to think about a professional woman in Manhattan in the 70s and 80s, busting her butt to build this business, I mean, that's a big plateau. And I know she hit a lot along the way because talk about failure at every turn. She really had to grow some calluses and get through it. She did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, and I echo what you say because I can tell you from personal experience that the program was really transformational for me and was just a refreshing wake-up call to the alternative I was looking at in the corporate world.
Yeah. And you know, it's about work and that's what I like. I mean, life coaching is easy, right? It's like, okay, I can take somebody who's at a 2 or 3 on a 10 scale and get them to 4 or 5 by making them feel great for a day and pat them on the back, right? Okay. That's not really that helpful. It's much harder to take somebody like you or to work with somebody like you, who's an accomplished person and is thinking, well, now I really want to get it right. And I know I've got a more remarkable path out there somewhere, but I'm having trouble finding it. And by the way, it's in the realm of work. It's not just kind of some vague idea about, you know, let's just feel good about ourselves. It's how do I get the work I deserve at the pay I deserve? And that's a really powerful process that I've never seen anything like it. And I had the reason Nella and I kind of joined up is because I had this little like JV version of that I was working through with millennials. It was very helpful, but it was nothing like Life Work Design. It doesn't have nearly the data or the history behind it. And it's a really powerful process and one I wish everybody did because, and sorry to blather on about this, but it's just very powerful for me because I see the internet is just awash in all the stuff about what you should do, right? Hey, you should set great goals. Hey, you should, you know, never back down until you get through them. It's like what I'm talking about today. Hey, you need to be focused. You need to be free-hearted and you need to be fearless. Okay, well, how do I do that? Well, the first step is to be self-aware. And then you can be all in, be those three things, right? But how you're actually self-aware, a lot of people need a process. Even those who are great in school and were pretty good professionals, at the end of the day, they need to do a lot more deep digging to figure out how they can be the best they can be and what their life plan should be. And it's a great feeling because all of a sudden you take active command of it.
So speaking of life plans, Spencer, what's coming up for you? What do we have to look forward to?
Well, we got a couple projects in the pipeline, which I am super psyched about because one of the other things that I've done, you were asking about some of the things I learned early on and did I learn all this stuff early on? And I continue to learn. One of the things that hit me like a frying pan to the face about 3 weeks ago was this idea of playing a bigger game. And somebody basically took me by the ears and said, you need to go play a bigger game. And that was really helpful advice because I was happy to kind of like be scraping along and having little successes and accumulating those. And wasn't that great? And this guy was like, stop doing that. So what we've done in just very recent terms is raised our game, frankly. And now we're partnering with incredible folks who are champions who want to use some of our principles and some of our backstops in order to help very specific markets that they're familiar with basically do meaningful work that maximizes value. And we've got another platform that we're about to launch that I think will be front page news when we launch it. It's just going to take a couple more weeks before we get all the pieces in order, but it's going to be a big top on this world, which I can't wait to launch. So you'll have to stay tuned on that one.
Okay. So for those that want to stay tuned, just want to check you out, how can they learn more about you and follow you?
Well, you can follow me. I'm on my bike most mornings on Dade Boulevard in South Beach trying to get to work.
And how about for those that are trying to follow you online?
Online. Okay. You can go to our great website, which is bestworkinc.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn. Spencer Deering is president of Best Work, Inc. And we've got a lot of great content on there that I think could help many of your listeners just to begin to adjust that mindset and to think about how to play that bigger game.
Sounds great. Well, Spencer, it's been great having you on today, talking about some really fundamental principles that are important for figuring out who you are and where you can make the biggest impact in your world. So thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My guest today has been Spencer Deering, president of Best Work, Inc. Thank you again, Spencer, for joining us. I'm David Schreiner Khan. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, part of the Best Network, dedicated to supporting individual entrepreneurs who are experts in their field, but may not be an expert at running a business. If you're a solopreneur who's an expert in your field, but not necessarily smashing your plateau in business, and you want to ramp your recurring revenue, join our Best Network. Receive expert individual and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands on our goal of the show, helping you to get your business the recurring revenue it deserves. To learn more about joining the Best Network, go to smashingtheplateau.com/best network. That's smashingtheplateau.com/best network. Join us and smash your plateau.